Okay, joining me today, tonight, is Mike O'Cahill. He is a writer for The Passionate Detachment. You see him on RT and other news outlets from time to time. And we were going to go over, we're pretty ambitious, and we were going to go over some of the worst and best of 2013 and breaking stories, and particularly with the Zionists and their and a sort of a list of the horrible things they did throughout the year. But then after looking at all of it, it was just overwhelming because of the amount of crime and awful things they've done. So we just pick out some nuggets and start with one of my favorite stories, which you broke, because I don't like John McCain and I feel like picking on John McCain pretty much any time. And that was when he went and met with the kidnappers, and there was also a connection to the Israeli lobby there. Could you talk about the Senator John McCain and his trip to go meet with organ-eating terrorists in Syria?
Right, yeah. I don't know why you want to pick on poor John McCain, but
many, many reasons.
as you know, you interviewed Jeff Gates, he calls his book Guilt by Association the McCain book. He has three chapters on McCain, and he said he could have written about 10 more.
The guy's got a raging case of post-traumatic stress syndrome, and he's just—he's pathetic. His father helped cover up the USS Liberty. There's just no redeeming quality about the guy.
Yeah, but the only good thing about McCain is whenever McCain opens his mouth, you know that he's serving an Israeli agenda. So you know it's fairly easy to you know, identify what the Israeli position is on any given conflict or issue. He's a fairly reliable mouthpiece for the Israel lobby. the story about his meeting with the Syrian rebels, and when it was revealed that he had met with
Hold on now. We should say rebels in quotes.
Oh, yes, sorry. Yes. Syrian, both words in quotation marks. Yeah. most of them are neither Syrian nor I don't know if rebels, terrorists probably would be a more objective term.
Terrorist mercenaries, because they are getting paid by a foreign outlet, or privateers, as I like to call them too, but. And they're not rebels.
No.
They're not organic to Syria, and they don't give a damn about the fate of Syria. They're just pushing their own agenda.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, there was a little bit of a scandal when it emerged that McCain had met with the kidnappers, a guy called Mohammed Noor of the Northern Storm group, and that had been involved in the 2012 abduction of Lebanese religious pilgrims. The Daily Beast, Josh Rogan, who's also a very, very predictable source. You need to keep an eye on Josh Rogan to know what McCain and Lindsey Graham and Joe Lieberman are up to. Seems to be their main publicist. So he came out with a defense of McCain. And in his defense of McCain, he cited a guy called Muas Mustafa. And Muas Mustafa is the executive director at the time it was little known, but it's since then achieved a little bit of notoriety, the Syrian Emergency Task Force, or SETF. Mustafa, he was cited by Rogan in the Daily Beast, saying that nobody had identified themselves as Noor and that McCain hadn't met with Mohammed Noor. So I started looking into Mustafa and his so-called NGO, the Syrian Emergency Task Force. And I discovered that Mustafa was listed as one of the Washington Institute's experts. The Washington Institute, formerly known as the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, the think tank WINEP, created by AIPAC in 1985.
I think they share a building still. Or used to.
And Winnip. I think so, yeah. I'm not 100% certain about that, but I mean, basically, yeah, Winnip is a, you know, an APAC creation, and it was set up to, and it's been quite successful because you know, Winup's experts are always cited in the media, and it's never mentioned, you know, that they're part of the Israel lobby or that they have any connection to AIPAC. So it's been quite a successful ruse.
They have a revolving door with the goobers over at Crystal's outfit, and Crystal and Kagan's outfit, that was sort of a mouthpiece for PNAC.
FBI PNAC 2.0, yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's a... Well,
I'm talking about the Weekly Standard. But that was the same kind of maneuvering. PNAC was the group, Weekly Standard was sort of the media mouthpiece, and WinUp is sort of this plausible deniability of AIPAC, but it's totally AIPAC.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So anyway, Mustafa, he was listed as one of WinUp's experts, and I also discovered that he had recently addressed a WinUp their annual SORAF symposium on the theme of Inside Syria, the battle against Assad's regime, and just looked a little bit more into his non-profit or so-called non-profit, and I discovered that one of the web addresses for the Syrian Emergency Task Force was syriantaskforce.toraacademybr.org. And when I looked up the Torah Academy, I found that BR stands for Boca Raton in Florida. And so it's a school in Florida whose academic goals include inspiring a love and commitment to Eretz Israel. Well, I wasn't surprised, you know, because of McCain's lifelong service to Eretz Israel at the expense of American interest. But Mustafa, he denied this in a tweet. He said it was utter BS. He said he was born in a refugee camp and he's denied entry to the Palestinian territories by Israel, even with an American passport. But he also, for somebody who's been, you know, dispossessed unable to return to his homeland, he doesn't bear too many grudges. He was quoted in the Jewish Daily Forward saying that the Jewish American community has always supported humanitarian causes. such as bombing Libya, Syria, Iraq, and almost anywhere Muslims need to be liberated, mostly from. You may remember Crystal, Willem Crystal wrote a piece in the Weekly Standard not so long ago, and the main and later Wolfowitz wrote a letter, and they were arguing over whether Libya was the fifth or sixth war of Muslim liberation. Those are the kind of humanitarian causes supported by the organized American Jewish community. After I wrote up this on my blog, The Passionate Attachment,
Hold on, I'll point out that that's self-proclaimed as well. I mean, just because they call themselves the Jewish community doesn't mean they are the Jewish community. They're a Jewish community.
They claim to represent the Jewish community, even though they probably represent at the very most one-third and maybe much, much less than that. I got a tweet from... Aza Winstanley, I think he works with Electronic Intifada, and he told me that I needed to update my report because the WinUp or the Washington Institute had deleted the pages that referred to Muaz Mustafa, and the video of his talk to the Surf Symposium had been changed. The setting had been changed to private. Then Mustafa, his Twitter handle is @SoccerMuaz, and he was, I suppose this made it easier for him to deny his ties to the lobby. He tweeted Aza Winstanley and me. He said, "Call me a terrorist, Al-Qaeda, Nazi, as others have, but not Zionist. I'm denied ever entering Palestine, but it lives in me." Despite those denials, his page, Mustafa's page, can still be found on another, APAC created WinApp, and WinApp then in turn created FICRA Forum, which is described itself as an online community for Arab Democrats in their struggle against authoritarians. Max Blumenthal, then, I'm not sure how he got involved, but he tweeted that at Soccer Muaz Mustafa, the executive director of the Syrian Emergency Task Force, strongly disputes my report on the passionate attachment, which was entitled "Did an Israel Lobby Front Group Organize McCain's Trip to Syria?" Blumenthal, he wrote that Muaz Mustafa told him that the URL registration was due to a dumb error by a web designer.
Right.
I'm just wondering, you know, why it took so long for the dumb error to be corrected. And, you know, it was only corrected after I published my piece on the passionate attachment. Later on, then this became big news when another member of the Syrian Emergency Task Force, Elizabeth Obadji, who was cited by McCain in a congressional hearing on Syria, as you know, one of the biggest the experts on the so-called Syrian rebels, and she supported or made the argument in the Wall Street Journal that they were mostly moderates, but it later emerged that she had lied about having a PhD, and she was forced to resign from the Institute for the Study of War.
That was all after the fact, when the damage had already been done. Then it comes out, oh, guess what? This isn't the person she said she was.
But after Max Blumenthal tweeted that, June 6th, when I wrote that report, I think it was in the middle of September, Blumenthal then wrote a piece for Mondo Weiss exposing 3 months later Muaz Mustafa and the Syrian rebel representative ties to the Israel lobby.
Did he cite you at all?
Actually, he linked to the passionate attachment, but he made no mention that, you know, he had been credulous of Mustafa's lame excuse 3 months earlier.
Well, that was a web error, and maybe that woman's false credentials was just a dumb web error too.
Yeah, it's just,
why would anybody fall for that?
Yeah, well, I suppose it was just like the Iraq war was another dumb error.
Yeah, it was just a web error.
Yeah.
on the internets.
Yeah, and just to follow up then on when McCain returned from his meeting with the so-called Syrian rebels, he was debriefed on his return by the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institute, the Saban Center, after the Washington Institute, the Saban Center is probably one of the, maybe the second most influential pro-Israel think tank in Washington. And that was set up by Chaim Saban, the Egyptian-born Israeli-American media mogul who
purchased the Brookings Institute.
Purchased the Brookings Institute in 2002, just before the Iraq War, with $12.3 million. And there's no doubt about where Saban's attachments lie. He told the New York Times in an interview that he was a one-issue guy and his issue was Israel. He also told the conference in Israel that he had a three-part strategy for influencing American policy in a pro-Israel direction. One was to make political donations, and the Clinton, especially Hillary Clinton, has benefited greatly from those donations, and she's his pick for presidential candidate in 2016. And the other two were to establish think tanks. So he did that by buying the Brookings Institute's Middle East policy, and the third one was to buy media outlets, and he bought the largest Spanish language station in the U.S., Univision. So anyway, when McCain returned from his meeting with the Syrian terrorists, he spoke at the Saban Center, and the talk was moderated by the co-founder of PNAC and the Foreign Policy Institute, with Will and Crystal, Robert Kagan, and he was introduced by the vice president of the Saban Center, Martin Indyk, who's its director of foreign policy. Martin Indyk, I believe, started the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. As you may remember, he was a London-born Australian who spent some time advising Yitzhak Shamir, moved to America, and they had to rush through his American citizenship so he could become the American ambassador to Israel. And while he was supposedly representing America in Israel, he was a bit sloppy with classified information. Apparently, left his laptop in the room, and when he left the room, and so I think he was the first ambassador to have his security clearance suspended for a while, pending investigation. Of course, he got it back due to Madeleine Albright's intervention. So that was, I guess, maybe the biggest story I broke this year.
You noticed that McCain, other than, you know, some leftist blogs and some serious independent media, he really didn't get any flack for that. And he's there taking photo ops with these known kidnappers and people who just slaughter kids, and the worst, you know, they're terrorists straight up, and nothing. He continues to go on trips and take photo ops. Nothing happened to him.
Well, I guess the thing is, you know, it's an indication that it's not just, you know, the right wing media. I mean, the so-called left wing or liberal or progressive media, you know, is also very much under pro-Israel influence. So I guess that's how people like traitors like McCain get away with it. So, you know, I suppose that the PC word is bipartisan. but there's bipartisan support for Israel's interests.
Yeah, even when they do not overlap with U.S. interests most of the time, but Israel always comes first.
Yeah, I would say they rarely coincide with American interests. And you know, you look at, say, the Iraq War or whatever,
They're detrimental to the U.S. interests.
Yeah, I mean, detrimental would be putting it mildly. Yeah, it's cost trillions of dollars, and it's destroyed American credibility. And there was not much oil for war, as people like Chomsky and what's the other guy? And Democracy Money Can Buy, Greg Palast. He was one of the main proponents of the war for oil thesis. But it's been China who has benefited most from Iraqi oil.
They had the oil anyway in the oil for food program, so there'd be no reason to mess with that. And it costs a lot more to steal it than it does to buy it.
So, you know, I mean, I think we've probably talked about this before, about the, you know, the role of the Israel partisans in the deception that led to that.
Yeah, I think that was back in March or something. Another good story from last year, even though it was rewritten reposted. Now, every March around the Iraq War, that's a good one to pull out. It's very reminiscent of the film I made about PNAC, which goes over the same material.
Yeah.
But it's something you have to say over and over again, because there are still people that believe we went to war in Iraq for oil or the petrodollar or whatever, and just in complete denial of the Israeli role for the pre-invasion lies, for the anthrax and WMDs and all that. It's not coming from oil companies. It was coming from Israeli partisans who are not just partisans to Israel. They are active members of the Defense Department or in the office of the vice presidency.
I think it's down to the influence of people like Chomsky and Greg Palast. As Jeff Blankfort says, you know, Chomsky is probably Israel's greatest asset, but Greg Palast isn't far behind. And, you know, they're favorites of on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now.
She's a good gatekeeper too on Israel, not on some issues, but definitely on that. And, you know, just look at the example when Mersheimer and Walt wrote the book about the lobby. She didn't have them on to talk about it. She had Chomsky on to talk about the book they wrote and wouldn't allow them to come on to debate or anything. You know what Chomsky's going to say. He says what he always says.
Exactly, yeah. And actually, you know, people don't look into, you know, the background. So they trust somebody like Greg Palast to be an objective, you know, muckraking journalist. But his sister is the managing director of the Israel Action Network. She used to work in the Clinton administration. And I just did a quick search here, and I'm not sure, I'll have to look into this, but an article came up that he's related to the Mossad chief, David Kimchi, like the spicy Korean food. You know, Palast was one of the main, you know, proponents of the war for oil thesis. And also he wrote a piece for Tikkun, basically making fun of the, you know, the Israel lobby argument, you know, that, you know, people like Stephen Snagovsky documented so well, you know, that it was a war for Israel. But a lot of, you know, progressives, liberals and leftists, they put their faith in the likes of Chomsky and Palast.
It's just very clear. I mean, the legal reason for the war was supposedly the violation of a UN resolution 1441. Particularly what they cited was that Saddam Hussein was making anthrax, and they had this whole myth that tied him to the 9/11 terrorist attack, saying that, you know, Iraqi officials met in Prague with Mohammed Atta and passed anthrax to him, and all those lies that was supposedly witnessed by Israeli security forces. And then James Woolsey and all the PNAC goons repeated this, Gary Schmidt and then Kagan and then Crystal and then Pearl and then Wolfowitz and then so on. Colin Powell went to the UN with a mock vial of anthrax in his hand and made his speech about the anthrax and made his speech about the little cartoon Mobile Weapons Labs, which is another myth from Louis Leibowitz's girlfriend, Judith Miller. And it's just a giant circle, and it all goes back to the same cabal.
Yeah.
And that was the legal reason for the war, not oil, not, you know, liberating the Kurds or whatever. You know, it was this violation of the UN resolution, which is a joke because other countries violate UN resolutions all the time and nothing happens. But what he went to the UN and made this speech that was written to him by Libby, and was holding up a vial of anthrax and waving it around and talking about anthrax, this and that, which they had falsely not only linked to Iraq, but also linking Iraq and 9/11 together. And if you remember, the notes also said, death to America and death to Israel. And it's the Israeli security forces lying about it. You end up getting a war. And all that got washed under the rug. And nobody talked about the anthrax angle on 9/11 again, because you have these, you know, melonhead Jonestown megaphone types just screaming about, you know, building 7 falling too fast or this, that, just little hair splitting minutia, really, and ignoring the giant lies where you really had people pinned down and that all just got washed under the rug. And people, it's just easy to slogan ear, no war for oil, too. And it's very easy to digest. Yeah. Say, oh, we want oil, we want money. So that's why they did it. And so it's really hard to combat that kind of propaganda. Yeah. Because you can't really sum up the Israeli role in a slogan.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, the war for Israel, maybe meme is becoming more popular. But speaking of the Iraq war being war for Israel, it reminds me of another story that I wrote this year for the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs. It was entitled The Incredible Tale of Gwyneth Todd and the Naive Neocons. Are you familiar with Gwyneth Todd, Ryan?
Yeah, well, because I read your work. But explain.
Well, Todd, she has an amazing CV. At the moment, she was presented as a whistleblower. Her last job was an American contractor advising the Bahrain-based U.S. Navy's Fifth Fleet. And according to a 5-page report in the Washington Post by Jeff Stein, strangely enough, a half-hour documentary that came out this February on Press TV, I think it was entitled Untold Truths, that she was presented as having single-handedly foiled a plot to provoke a war with Iran, and that, you know, as a result of her heroism, she was hounded out of her job, and she escaped to Australia, where she's now living in fear of her life. When I started doing a little bit of research into Gwyneth Todd's whistleblower story, it didn't hold together for very long. So basically, in the Washington Post, which is, you know, basically neocon central, and Press TV, which you would assume would be on the opposite side.
No, I would not assume that. I think you know what I think about Press TV and Veterans Today and the rest of those kooks.
Just, you know, saying what you know, a lot of people would assume that you know, the Washington Post and representing Israeli interests, and Press TV being the state TV of the Islamic Republic, that you wouldn't expect them to be putting out the same version of this whistleblower story. But anyway, according to the Washington Post and the Press TV version of Gwyneth Todd's story, this conspiracy to start a war with Iran occurred in Bahrain in 2007. When I looked into the origin of this story, I discovered that the first time this story was mentioned was in a June 2012 article by Gordon Duff, the so-called senior editor at Veterans Today. He wrote that Gwyneth Todd of the National Security Agency, a close associate of Paul Wolfowitz and Condi Rice, back in 2005, discovered a White House plot to stage an attack on American forces in Qatar. So there we have the exact same plot happening 2 years apart in two neighboring countries. And then, to make confuse matters even more, another Veterans Today colleague who was an enthusiastic promoter of Todd's story, Kevin Barrett, who's also another favorite political analyst on Press TV.
These are the same guys that were trying to smear upstanding people like Grant Smith and Jeff Plankford, who both have been on this show, which is just a major red flag right there, because
I think
this is baloney.
One of the many giveaways. Gordon Duff called Jeff Blankford, he said he was working for Israel or something like that. Talk about projection.
Have you seen, next time you talk to Jeff Gates, ask him about his trip with Gordon Duff. Have you seen my Woodshed video on Duff? It's pretty hilarious.
Say that again, sorry?
Have you seen the Woodshed video I did of Gordon Duff?
Yeah. I think you were way too soft on it. So Kevin Barrett, in his version of the story, the plot happened in 2006, and this time it was back in Bahrain. But
Mike, it was just a little website error.
A dumb error by a web designer. Yeah,
that's what happened.
Right.
It must be the same guy that made Obama's healthcare website.
And the guy who wrote the website for Muaz Mustafa, she claimed in an interview, a radio interview with Kevin Barrett, that 9/11, wait for this, 9/11 was a setback for the neocons. Right. And she said it was a setback because it upset their plans for regime change in Iraq. And according to Todd, their plan was to restore a pre-1958 type friendly regime ruled by Ahmed Chalabi. And then Iraq would serve as a base from which to launch regime change in Iran. And this gets even, it gets better, right? She claimed in the same interview that the neocon agenda for Iraq had nothing to do with Israel, right? She said about Wolfowitz, didn't Wolfowitz admit to having affairs with Palestinian students? She neglected to mention that he had been investigated for passing classified American documents to an Israeli government official, but having spent a lot of his life in Israel.
His sister's also a settler in Hebron.
Right. Yeah. So she admitted to having been personally recruited by none other than the Clean Break study group leader Richard Perle, and she said she met Perle at Bush's inaugural George Bush W. Bush's pre-inaugural candlelight dinner in January 2001. And this is a quote she said.
Pearl, who was an arms dealer for Israel, too.
Exactly, yeah. She said that Pearl told her that Paul Wolfowitz is going to be the Deputy Secretary of Defense. You know what we're going to do in Iraq, and we need like-minded people in the Pentagon so we can make it happen. And so Kevin Barrett expressed amazement that she had been recruited by the Prince of Darkness. And Todd's not very convincing reply was, yes, well, when I'd met him on a couple of I'd been in conferences with him before. So obviously Pearl put a lot of trust in somebody who just met at a few conferences. She was trying to explain how people like Pearl could be so naive. She recounted a car journey with Pearl in the 1990s, in which he supposedly raved about her predecessor at the Pentagon's Turkey desk. She was saying that Pearl was so impressed with this analyst because he was able to talk to cab drivers in Turkish. So she said she was shocked by Pearl's total naivete. Then she went on to say that she heard the exact same story from fellow Iraq War architect Bernard Lewis at the Aspen Strategy Group in 1997.
For which Pearl is a fellow.
You'll never guess she was seated between Bernard Lewis, who was brought in by Pearl to advise Cheney leading up to the Iraq War, and none other than Judith Miller, the main conduit for Lewis Libby's weapons of mass destruction lies on the front page of the New York Times.
Well, she was very reliable to blame everything on Iraq, but she blamed everything on Iraq, from the 1993 World Trade Center bombing to the Oklahoma City bombing to everything. She just said Iraq did all of it.
Corey Milroy, yeah.
In her piece, she sourced in her infamous piece on the mobile weapons labs was Richard Pearl and Paul Wolfowitz. giant circle.
So the Todd story gets even more incredible. She's supposedly on the run in Australia, but I discovered that we're not sure whether it was 2007 or 2005 or 2006 that she went on the run, or whether it was from Bahrain or Qatar, but she went to Australia, and in November 2010 she was asked to write a report on Turkey for Australia's leading pro-Israel foreign policy think tank, the Lowy Institute for Foreign Policy, which was founded and is chaired by Frank Lowy, who along with Larry Silverstein took out a 99-year lease on the World Trade Center 6 weeks before 9/11. She claimed that she had no knowledge of the Lowy Institute's and Frank Lowy's Israeli connection, but I'd seen on social media she had acknowledged she knew about the connection. Weeks before, she feigned ignorance and surprise in the comment section of The Passionate Attachment when I wrote about this story first. Possibly the reason why she was on the run was she was questioned by the FBI in 2007 about $30,000 that she had received from her from the father of her daughter, a guy called Robert Cabelli, who was indicted in 2009 for conspiring to act as an illegal agent of Sudan and violating sanctions against the Omar al-Bashir's government. Todd said that she told federal agents that the money was for emergency surgery in Bahrain. But by a strange coincidence, this was the exact same amount of money, $30,000, that she told the New York Times in February 2011 that she had once spent out of her own pocket to buy gifts for the children of the poorest Shiite families in Bahrain.
This lady just has no end to her lies.
I know. But the thing is, right, I mean, who would take this person seriously except Jeff Stein in the Washington Post? Washington Post devoted 5-page special to her whistleblowing story, and Press TV made a documentary repeating, uncritically repeating her, you know, wild claims. But I think the best way to sum up her whole tale is basically the bad guy in this story. So, I mean, you know, more than likely, as Patrick Clawson let it slip there in 2012 at a Washington Institute dinner conference, that he was looking for a false flag. They'd need a false flag to start a war with Iran. That President Obama was unlikely to go to war unless Iran could be made to fire the first shot. So, you know, I mean, there's a high probability that Israel and its agents would be trying to provoke Iran into an attack on American forces. But in Todd's tale, the bad guy is Admiral William J. Fallon, the former commander of U.S. Central Command. And the strange thing is that Fallon, in 2007, he had actually vetoed a move by the Bush administration to send another carrier group to the Persian Gulf. He said that an attack on Iran will not happen on my watch. So, you know, he was a very unlikely villain in Todd's narrative. But he was asked to comment on the piece, the Washington Post special by Jeff Stein, and Fallon's terse email response was BS, and he left it at that. So I think that's probably the best, most succinct summary of Todd's tale. But
I'm waiting for Todd to say, "And then the guard shot me, but it didn't go through my clothing, and then I killed the guard with an axe."
Well, yeah. That a deadly poisonous snake was left on their doorstep. supposedly by the Israel lobbyist that hired her to write a paper on Turkey. Funnily enough, for
such... Wait, are you being facetious, or did she say something like that?
Same that. I mean, if you look at the comment section on my blog, The Passionate Attachment, and she accused me of endangering her life, that I was inciting, people to hatred against her. And that, you know, her life was in danger, and that, a deadly poisonous snake. I know you think I'm making this up, but, this is her story. And apparently she's still sticking to it.
I think whoever writes her script must have also been the same people who did the whole, used car salesman who is, an agent of Iran that was going to assassinate a Saudi Arabian in a cafe in Washington using hired guns from Mexican drug cartels. Who, by the way, were also in cahoots with Hezbollah.
right. And apparently Mexican drug cartel has close ties to the Mossad. And they just happened to be infiltrated by, was it a DEA agent, yeah, who the used car salesman had the misfortune to try to recruit.
A used car salesman who was practically legally retarded also.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, obviously the Al-Quds force are desperate for agents in America to blow up Saudi ambassadors. In crowded Washington, D.C. restaurants.
There were some dumber tales, though. Do you remember, actually, I think it was 6 or 7 when they had the almost had another Lusitania incident in the Strait of Hormuz. What was it? It was like soldiers just, it ended up, the excuse was, they were just playing around and it was fake. But they were trying to say that Iranian ship had fired on the Americans when nothing had happened.
Right, yeah.
Reminiscent of Gulf of Tonkin type thing.
Yeah. Well, I suspect, I mean, you know, the Todd story, you know, it's easy to dismiss it, but I suspect that this story was put out as a cover for, you know, a more likely, a more plausible false flag attempt by Israel and its agents. It certainly wouldn't have been, you know, Admiral Fallon that would have been behind a false flag attack or an attempt to provoke Iran into a war with America.
You think if that's clear yet to people that the reason there's a target on Iran and the reason there's sanctions on Iran are for Israeli interests? I mean, it's not, it doesn't benefit the United States or Europe whatsoever to not buy oil from Iran and to threaten to attack Iran. Israel certainly is chomping at the bit to smash them, but they're not a threat to the United States. They're not going to invade America or anything like that.
Well, I can't believe that there could be anybody who doesn't realize that Israel, you know, and Israel alone is behind the effort to get America into a war with Iran. Actually, the last piece I posted on the Passionate Attachment was just yesterday.
Are they going to blame that on oil too when the sanctions actually forbid the U.S. from buying any oil from Iran? Is it mean a complete opposite effect?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's the, you know, the so-called nuclear, non-existent nuclear threat. But the piece I posted was 47 treasonous senators take Israel's word over the U.S. intel community. It was based on Jim Loeb's piece at Loeblog, and he listed the 47 senators who have co-sponsored the Nuclear Weapon Free Iran Act of 2013. A lot of familiar names here: Kelly Ayotte, Cory Booker, who was the head of the Chabad Society at Oxford University. He was mentored by Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, who is also a spiritual advisor to Michael Jackson. You have Benjamin Cardin, who's been behind the effort to sanction Russian government officials over the what's the guy's name who was the lawyer who was murdered in prison? Slipped my mind now. Other familiar names there. You have Ted Cruz, who attacked or questioned Chuck Hagel's credentials to be defense secretary. Remember, he was horrified at the thought of Hagel criticizing Israel, you know, considering what had happened to Jewish people in the Holocaust. And Cruz, he made two trips to it.
Because after all, there's a total connection there, right?
absolutely, yeah. Let's see, who else is here? We have Lindsey Graham.
He's a Christian Zionist.
Yeah, and Mark Kirk, of course, who's even when he was in hospital, he was still putting out pro-Israel pieces, or people who ran his office were putting out legislation that was probably coming directly from Tel Aviv. You have McCain again. Marco Rubio and Chuck Schumer, of course. So a lot of familiar names there, bipartisan support for war with Iran. As I said in it's just a short post, but I said if Americans ever, you know, assert their real national security interests and shake off this occupation of Washington, which Jeff Blankford calls Israel's most important occupied territory, the Israel's agents and assets are helpfully leaving behind an extensive documentary record of their treason. One need only just look at the list, go to the AIPAC website and see all the legislation that they have sponsored, plus the fact that the sanctions, And this is what a lot of people, maybe, you know, a lot of people, even maybe Iranians, don't see the Israeli hand behind the sanctions regime. The sanctions regime is run by a new unit in the Treasury Department. I think it was set up in 2004, and it was the brainchild of the American Israel Public Affairs Committee and the Washington Institute of Near East Policy. It's a unit of financial terrorism, and almost everybody who's run it, Matthew Levitt, who's now an expert on counterterrorism, Stein, expert on counterterrorism at the Washington Institute. You have Stuart Levy, and the current head of this unit is David S. Cohen. So it's basically, you know, a position, a unit that was created within the U.S. Treasury by the Israel lobby, and it's run by, you know, Israeli agents. But it looks like it's America that's behind the sanctions regime. So you have the likes of, you know, David S. Cohen going around the world and threatening other countries not to do business with Iran in the name of America. But, you know, clearly this, you know, if people look a little bit more, a little more deeply into it, as people like Grant Smith have, it's clear that, you know, the calls for war with Iran are coming from one source, and that source is Israel.
You know, I was thinking Todd ought to get together with Arnon Milchin and make a movie about her awesomeness.
Yeah.
He would get financed in a day.
Familiar with Arnon Milchin.
Now he has now recently, like last month, openly come out and bragged about his role of being an Israeli asset.
Not just an asset, an Israeli agent.
He was an arms dealer. He most of the fronts when they were getting their nuclear weapons were from his own.
Yeah, is it Hilai Trading, and you had Netanyahu at the other end. I don't know if you read a piece. It's back, I think, 1996 in the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs by Neve Gordon, an Israeli academic, and it was an investigation into Netanyahu, I looked through his social security files, revealed that he had used four different names: Benjamin Netanyahu, Ben Nitai, and because he was in Boston at the time, two Irish names, John J. Sullivan and John J. Sullivan Jr.
He went to school in Pennsylvania.
Right. Actually, he lived next door to Condi Rice. His father and Condoleezza Rice's father worked in the same department, and at Dropsy College. So strangely enough, Condoleezza Rice grew up next door to the Israeli prime minister. I've lost my thread now.
Were you saying he had the four different names when he looked into his SS records, and two Irish names?
Gordon.
But what the report was saying from 96.
So the title of the piece was Spook, Terrorist, or Criminal? ? Perhaps
all of the above.
Yeah, applies. And Milchin, what was really I guess still I shouldn't be shocked anymore, but it was shocking to see most of the reports on Milchin's bragging about being an Israeli spy were the interviews with his friends in Hollywood, people like Robert De Niro, Martin Scorsese, and more importantly, Ben Affleck, who made the Academy Award-winning Argo, that reminded everybody how how crazy those Iranians are. And that none of them seem to be too perturbed that their friend and top Hollywood tycoon was a spy for a foreign country.
Yeah, look, I helped steal nuclear weapons from America and got them on the black market and got nuclear weapons in the Middle East. You ought to go to jail for that, but when you're doing it for Israel, you just get a pat on the back.
Yeah. So it's you know, it's an indication of the influence in not just in Congress, but also in the popular culture.
Well, he was the producer for JFK, which is the movie with Oliver Stone, which was the most epic whitewashing of the Israeli role in JFK ever. I mean, it just, that film is usually the starting point for most, you know, amateur JFK researchers or philosophies about it, and they didn't mention the Israeli role whatsoever. And in the morning, I'm going to be interviewing Collins Piper about that, Michael Collins Piper, because he wrote a great book on that. But that was all Milchan as well, that film.
It just reminded me that I discovered something else about that, the book that's, you know, considered to be the best book on the subject by the mainstream media, James Douglas's book. The title now has slipped. Are you familiar with this one? The Unspeakable, right?
Yeah, I read it. And I was talking to Blankford about it. Because he was kind of sold on it for a little while, but maybe after talking, I might have changed his mind again. I don't know.
Well,
but it basically blames the CIA and the war in Vietnam as the main reason, and da da da.
Well, I did a little bit of, you know, research into that book, and I saw that it was reprinted by Simon & Schuster, which is a division of CBS Corporation. And the president and chief executive of CBS is Leslie Moonves, who just happens to be a great nephew of David Ben-Gurion, who was the Israeli prime minister that resigned before JFK could get him to open up Dimona to inspection.
Yeah, as well as the right of return and many other things.
The right of return and the effort by Robert Kennedy after Fulbright's hearings to get the forerunner of APRAC, the American Zionist Council, to register as foreign agents. So as you know, as Jeff Blankford said in a recent speech, Kennedy crossed three red lines for Israel, and funnily,
not to mention Robert was going after a lot of their mob handlers too.
Exactly. Yeah. So he
and he got shot by a Palestinian.
Who?
Robert Kennedy, according to the official story.
What happened? Yeah.
So yeah, that's the wraps up. Well, hopefully when I get my webmaster stuff straight and all, I'll be able to mirror your blog from the Passionate Detachment over on ANC Report, and you'll be one of the first members of the network. That's my plan anyway.
An honor and a privilege. Thanks, Ryan.
Well, thanks for the talk, and we could go on and on, I think, for hours, but we're reaching 1 hour, which is usually the time I use, so we'll talk more on some of the stories. It's always a pleasure to have you on. You're very knowledgeable, and I'm glad Blumenthal at least put a link to you, but he didn't acknowledge his how bad he got sold on it. But
yeah,
you know, he did do a good film with David.
Feeling the Hate in Jerusalem.
Yeah, and the new so-called new racism with the African migrant workers.
Yeah, it is.
It was good. So, okay, man. Well, I'll see you later. We both live in Japan, everybody. So we'll go have a beer together and we'll talk a little more. And I look forward to having you on the network and coming back on the program soon.
Okay. Okay, Ryan. Thanks a million. Yeah, talk to you soon.
Take care.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Hey, actually, before you go, tell people about the, I know you're working on it still, but the little piece on Glenn Greenwald. Because I think a lot of people have kind of reserved judgment and want to know what he's doing. I know Sybil Edmonds and others have raised some questions, but what's the new article called?
It's called In Israel, Greenwald Reveals Whose Agenda He's Serving. And it's based on Haaretz's article today, or January 7th. And Glenn Greenwald, there are more Snowden documents on Israel. And in that, it's based on an interview he did with Israel's Channel 10, which is owned by Ronald Lauder, of Estee Lauder fame, and also the head president of the World Jewish Congress. But in that interview with Channel 10, Greenwald basically said that America was being hypocritical, keeping Jonathan Pollard in prison. And moreover, he said that it's proper to raise Pollard's case in the context of U.S. spying on its Israeli ally. So he says, you know, does the U.S. government think that the democratically elected Israeli officials are involved in terror?
Wow. Well, this is, you know, after one of Snowden's own documents revealed that the NSA shares everything it has with the Israelis.
Right, yeah. But apparently, you know,
before that it was just
pretty green. I mean, apart from the state terror that Israel is involved in, you know, we've talked about, you know,
the open ethnic cleansing.
And I mean, you know, it's documented, say, the Levon affair and the USS Liberty and so on. So
it's all Levon affair, Operation Susanna, though, because Levon was actually a fall guy.
Exactly, yeah. And not to mention the as Philip Giraldi wrote the other day, the five dancing Shlomos that were caught celebrating on 9/11.
Again, that one is distraction from the ones caught with bombs on the George Washington Bridge.
Well, you know, I mean, there's plenty of, you know, evidence of Israel, at the very least, Israeli foreknowledge. So
I know, but I'm just, you know, I've been on that from day one, and I always get met with the five dancing Israelis, and people ask me if I know about it. So I'm like, yes, I got it. You know, what's interesting is the talk show they went on in Israel. They had swapped the Kitzberg brothers around, and they were in the audience. And they had Mamari up there, who wasn't even one of the original. Once, you know, we got the redacted report in August of 2011, they weren't the original. Yaron Shmuel was up there, and he was supposed to be, but we're not interviewing two of the men who were actually involved in the dancing and taking pictures.
But I mean, it's beyond belief that Greenwald would say.
Oh, Jonathan Pollard did more damage. I mean,
yeah. But you know, it's almost reminiscent of Chomsky. You know, it's like it's hypocritical to boycott Israel because America is much worse. And Greenwald is coming out with something similar. You know, America shouldn't put Israeli spies under surveillance because America is spying on everybody else.
Well, I don't see how that relates to allowing a criminal that did such damage to the U.S. out. I mean, one spine's wrong, the other spine wrong. You can't say, like, well, we do it, so there's okay, it's all okay. I mean, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And you ought to hear, they have this new media outfit with Jeremy Scahill, who I thought did an excellent book on Blackwater, but after talking to Thomas Mountain a little while on African politics and then reading Dirty Wars, I was pretty disappointed.
Was it?
His focus is like, oh, drones are bad. Well, duh. It's a very safe kind of Democracy Now! Type issue, you know. Yeah, don't kill kids with drones, duh. But how could you be over in Somalia and for so long and doing these stories and not mention the, you know, 2.5 million people dying of starvation and so on? I mean, like, there's just such greater crimes. Yeah. And it's sort of like the Monica Lewinsky angle. They're just focusing on this little tiny minutia of a much, much larger criminal enterprise.
And you know, I mean, he wouldn't be on Democracy Now! So often if he were, you know, telling the whole truth.
Yeah, that's pretty clear indicator, too. Which is disappointing because he did great work in the beginning. And I've always liked Greenwald's reporting for, you know, somebody in The Guardian on, in a major paper, but, you know, as far relative, you know, to some of the others.
He wouldn't be reporting for The Guardian if he was telling the whole truth either. So
no, you can't. You can't. I mean, you just can't. So we know that too well. But I'll let you finish up the report. Send that over to Sibelle. I think she'll get a kick out of that.
Right.
Because they've been raising a lot of questions over there in Boiling Frogs as well. And I'll have you on again in the near future.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Ryan.
All right. Always.